You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet,
and story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You just been listening to Texas, Hot Texas, by the Hot Texas Swing Band, from our friend Alex Dormont.
And we're so excited you're joining us for episode 118. If you go to find it later on Podbean, we are delighted to have with us two authors joining us. And we're going to find out a little bit about why Minnesota lakes, mysteries, and memories. We're going to find out what they all have in common.
There seems to be a lot of camaraderie here.
The second guest who will be joining us, I'm going to just go ahead and announce his name, Daryl J. Peterson, and he has written two wonderful books, Campfire in the Basement, with its companion volume, Who Will Carry the Fire. Yeah. He will be joining us shortly, but we're going to start with Marjorie Matheson Hance, and there she is. Hello. Marjorie.
Great to see you.
We're going to be talking about her first book of a series set again in Minnesota, Murder at Pelican Lake. And welcome, Marjorie.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Where are you joining us though from tonight?
I'm joining you from Phoenix, as you can see by the cactus behind me. Not cold. Though.
So you didn't want to stay there and was really cold in Minnesota?
I did not. It's been 15 below this week at the lake, so no.
Oh my goodness, 50 below. You know, I keep trying to get reads. I keep trying to pull up cities to see how cold is it in Minnesota today. And some of them that I'm trying to pull up, there's no information.
It was that cold.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, we are so delighted to have you with us. We have lots of things in common, including the good folks at Blue Cottage Agency, but we also have Minnesota, as it turns out, in common, and good reads. We have loving good reads. Yeah. We have that in common, too. So, Jim, you want to start off with a little something about Marjorie?
A little information, and Marjorie will tell us more. So, bio: Marjorie Matheson Hance. She has been memorized by Pelican Lake for over 50 years. In that time, she has paddleboarded, kayaked, cruised on her pontoon boat, and been intrigued by the lives of Pelican Lake residents. When she can tear herself away from her lake home, Marjorie resides in Wayzata, Minnesota, where she is a member of the writing group Twin Cities Sisters in Crime. Welcome.
And I'm holding up the cover for those who might just be listening. What a engaging cover. Oh, my goodness. The book, again, is Murder at Pelican Lake. But before we get started, Marjorie, you got to tell me where this cover came from.
Yeah, let's talk about that
cover. Great. The cover was done by Marcella Rose, who is an artist from Pelican Rapids, Minnesota. And she's known for her wildlife portraits. And what she especially does well are eyes. And so I insisted she put one of her eyes in that pelican, which is kind of staring out at you. And she did not want to put blood dripping down, but I talked her into that too.
Yeah. Well, and it really does. It really does make it, truly does make it so very gripping. So
that was a good idea with the blood on her. I thought that was kind of a neat touch.
So this is a very engaging, cozy murder mystery. And it's part of a series. You want to just tell us a little bit maybe about your writing background and then how this book came to be?
Sure. Well, my writing background for most of my career, I was a national sales manager at Honeywell and a vice president of a university. So I did a lot of business writing. I had to write grants, I had to write reports, I had to write customer proposals. And business writing is very different from murder mystery writing. You know, you start with the bottom line, you give all the evidence point by point. And in murder mystery writing, you've got to find your way. So what happened was that I was, I started writing novels back in about a year after my husband died. It was 2008, and we had a lake home at Pelican Lake. And untypically, I was there alone. My two daughters were young adults, and they were off in their own lives. They weren't living with me then. And so I was at the lake all by myself for 2 weeks while it was raining. And I didn't know what to do. I was bored. And I thought, I'm never bored. I refuse to be bored. So I just started to write about the characters on the beach. And my mother came out later in that time period, and I had her read it. And she said, you can't print that. I said, well, I'm not going to print that. And then I thought, why not print something? This could be fun.
Yeah.
And so I started writing. And then my daughters gave me a gift of a class at the Loft, which is a writer's guild in Minneapolis, about how to write a murder mystery. And it took off from there. And it only took me 10 years to finish my first book.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. So I love to ask this question that we don't remember to ask it that often. As a reader, how are you able to read books in the genre that you write in? Are you able to read them as carefree as a reader does? Or is the experience a little bit different now?
The experience is very different now. I mean, first, I love learning, and I especially love when a writer has good evocative language. I really learn from that, and it's very engaging. And for the rest of it, I just find myself analyzing it now. So mysteries are no longer just relaxation. It's like, I've got to figure out why did they do it like this? How would I do it? There's all the structure and complexity, and it's not nearly as much fun. Not much of a stress reliever as it used to be.
Yeah, I see reading and say, oh, no, this is not going to work.
This is
Yeah. So what do you have some genres that you do enjoy to read that you're able to just be a reader? Or now that you're a writer, is it different for anything you read?
Well, I read a lot of what I would call literary fiction.
Yeah.
And I especially like that. I'm in a book club, and I'm always the one who calls out how things have been written beautifully in a book, because I want to emulate that. Yeah. And so that's probably the most literature that I read now.
Yeah. This is the first book, but we know there are two others out. Right. So when you started to write this one, did you already know I've got book two and three and whatever coming down the pike? Or did you write this one and then everybody said, oh my gosh, what happens? Is Carly, how did the rest of the series come about?
Yeah. When I started, I just wanted to write this one book. And I'd say about halfway through the book, I knew what books two and three would be. But I thought, I'll wait and see if people like the book. Good. If there's any interest in the book, and there was, it was a lot of fun. And I also didn't know where the plot was going when I started this book. Okay. So some days I'd try to develop that. One day I sent the main character out golfing and I said, go look for the plot while you're out there. And she found the plot. And from that point on, the book took off. So the other two books I knew, and that's probably why it took me 10 years to write it. That and because I was working full time, but the next two books went very fast because I knew what I wanted to go have in both of those. So they just kind of flew out of my head.
How fun. Well,
you've gotten a lot of positive response, I think, for readers, haven't you?
I have. It's been great. I think that's the most unexpected thing about writing is that I always thought I'd be off by myself writing. Yeah. And I've been very engaged with people throughout this whole process. I had a young woman and her family come up from Nebraska and ask if they could meet with me. And so we did, and we still are in communication. I had her as a beta reader for something else that I was rewriting. I had a book club that had me come for each one of the books as they were published. And then they rented an Airbnb up on Pelican Lake and had t-shirts made for the occasion. And we took them around on our pontoon boat and served them our signature cocktail from book one. Uh-huh. So I never, ever thought there would be fun like that.
How fun.
Like fan clubs,
well,
you know?
Yeah, so it seems like you could create, I know there's a wonderful murder mystery writer that writes all about Paris, and she's created tours now, and you can go with her, and she'll take you to the different places where the stories have been set. You see, you could do that. Like that. Yeah.
Pontoon rides, yeah.
And drinks. We'll
water skiing, yeah.
Well, you could do it in summer and the winter.
Well, I don't think she'll do it in the winter.
No ice fishing?
Oh, my goodness. So let's get a little bit more in depth with this particular book. So without giving a lot of the story away or giving us too many spoiler alerts, can you give us a brief sort of storyline?
Sure. Well, the story starts with the kidnapping of a young girl. She's 16 years old. Her name is Lindsay. But she's not the main character of the book. The main character's name is Carly. She's 34 years old. She had just moved back to the lake because now it's the only home she has. And before that, her father had died about 2 years ago, her mother 14 years ago, and her brother is a professor at UCLA. So he doesn't come back to the lake. So she's there on her own. She used to live in Minneapolis, and the company she worked for was bought out by a New York firm. And she was offered a job in New York, but she declined because she had a serious boyfriend. They were talking marriage. They lived together. And so the company offered her a consulting contract. And unfortunately, the boyfriend didn't stay with her. He fell in love with someone else along the way. And so her
as
reason
boyfriends do. Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of dumped her, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know,
so she was jobless, homeless, well, almost jobless, homeless and loveless. And so she returns to Pelican Lake to regroup. She wants to start over.
Yeah. What was the inspiration for, you know, sort of the story? Did you had this big plan in the back of your mind, or just did it just sort of come together?
It really emerged over time. And that made it harder to write because I wasn't always sure exactly where it was going to go. But once I figured out the plot, then it really did. And so for Carly, what she doesn't know is that there's a lot swirling around her. And so I developed the swirl and some of the complexity of the plot. Her father had a patent for a spectrometer, and I knew all about spectrometers because I had written a grant for $500,000 spectrometer for the university. And so I knew a lot about spectrometers. But there's a whole plot that's swirling around the spectrometer. And also the young woman who was kidnapped is the daughter of a friend of her father. And so she becomes involved in trying to help find things about her and what happened to her.
I think as readers, we often really identify or begin to identify with a sense, I'm going to say sense of place. Yes. And I think, of course, you name it, Murder at Pelican Lake. But Pelican Lake, you describe it early on. And of course, we meet the lake throughout the book. What is it about Pelican Lake that calls you to have it be a main character in this series?
That's a good question. Well, I've been on the lake for 56 years, and I just love it deeply. And I think the interesting thing about a lake, I think this is probably true of most lake homes, but I know it's really true on Pelican, is that people are really nostalgic about it because a lake represents everything you love. It's family, it's fun, it's beauty, it's everything kind of tied up in a peaceful, fun place. So people are very nostalgic about it. And in the first chapter, I describe what a lake smells like. And I described it as a combination of fresh water, dead fish, cut grass, wet wood. And I've had so many people say to me, I know that smell. I know that smell. Anywhere else. But
Before we get into characters, was there any... You're very obviously, you know, you're a writer that's writing about what you know, even the spectrometer. Are there areas that you found you did have to do research? And maybe just briefly, what were you called to study?
Sure. Well, I had to do research on the border. One of the things that I did when I set out was that, like most authors, I use things I know, so, or that I'm familiar with. So spectrometer came into it, anhydrous ammonia. My father used to have a Reaper graphics company, and ammonia was something that he protected us from quite a bit. And so I knew about that. Let's see, what else did I, there were a couple of other things I knew about. The Canadian border. The Canadian border, you know, everyone worries about the Mexican border. And the Canadian border is only a couple of hours away from Pelican Lake. So part of the story happens at the border. And I didn't know much about the border. So, for instance, do border agents carry guns? What would happen? How many border agents would there be? What does the border control look like? How would they act? So I had to do a fair amount of research about that, which was really fun. Mm-hmm. Also, judo moves. Mm-hmm. Who knew how helpful they would be? So I researched those. And then FBI, because there is some FBI involvement. And I had a woman, I actually had two policemen and an FBI who gave me background information so I would know how the FBI really works.
You had a question.
Well, yeah. How is that Canadian border? Can you just go up there and drive across without any problem? Or do you get stopped and frisked and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it depends. it turns out.
Well, see, I'm behind in my reading.
Like, no.
You might get frisked, Jim. You don't know. the border has quite good control. And it's good. Especially, you know, I think there are probably parts of Montana where it's not so good. But in North Dakota, where it's so flat and would be easy, they've got lots of infrared and cameras, and I don't think people get through very easily up there. So yeah, it's, they've got a lot of protection.
We're going to move into characters. I'm watching our time. We still have a couple more minutes, so we want to talk about characters. Do you want to ask your favorite question?
Oh yeah, well, we talked about the other day, you know. you got total control of these folks, but do they ever surprise you?
Oh, all the time. Because, you know, like a lot of writers, I hear a lot of writers say this, but it's kind of like the story happens out here in my imagination. And I go there and I watch what's going on. And it's almost as if that whole plot is happening, whether I direct it or not. And so a lot of things where I go, oh, didn't see that coming. And sometimes I've had to change it. Sometimes it's maybe too dark. But I've frequently been surprised. And the people are so real to me. That's what's always been intriguing. And my job is to make them real to the other, to everyone.
How did you meet Carly?
Oh, good question. Well, I came up with her description, but I pictured her first. And I knew she would be Norwegian because lots of people up there are athletic, tall, stressed, grieving. And from there, I just followed her. And that's how I got to know her.
That's how you got to know her.
Yeah. You know, we asked the other day, you know, if you were in, you know, any of the characteristics of you were in Carly, but you said you saw a characteristic of your daughters in Carly.
I do. I see characteristics of neither one of them exactly. It's not me for sure. Yeah. Like, I never think of me being in Carly's place. Well, I might think of that, but I don't see myself as being Carly. You know, it's very different from that. But there are definitely elements of my daughters who are now a little bit older than Carly.
We're going to call out just a couple characters' names, and you can give us a sentence.
Okay.
Or you can say pass.
Yes.
So the first one is Abigail Rose.
Oh, she is the white Westie Terrier. And she's so cute. Yeah, she's a darling dog. She's very protective of Carly, and she's very inquisitive. And also, Carly has another pet, which is a cockatiel named Prattle. And she talks to both pets.
She's told you about
Prattle. We were talking about the cockatiels today, you know. Does that cockatiel talk?
It makes words, but not, no, it doesn't. It's not like a parrot.
Yeah.
Years ago, I'm just thinking, years ago, I supervised a pet department, you know, in a couple of lifetimes ago, and we had cockatiels, and everybody said, well, they're going to talk. I never heard one of those birds ever say anything.
I think there's a story in that. You'll need to write down. Ask her about another character. One more character. Ask her about another character.
Yes.
You know, let's talk about Lindsay.
Oh, Lindsay. Lindsay is the 16-year-old who was abducted. And that was kind of interesting. We have snippets of what happens to her with her kidnappers. But I had to, early on, I really had to decide how much I was willing to let happen to her, because I didn't want to build a plot on the misfortune of a child. Mm-hmm. And so you don't see a lot of Lindsay, but you see enough mm-hmm. to know that mm-hmm. she's in danger.
Yeah, we know. We as readers, we know. Well, Marjorie, I'm looking at time. So tell us, where can people find you, follow you, get your books? Give us all that.
Thank you. Well, you can find me on my website, which is mmhance.com. That's the best place to start. On Facebook, I'm Marjorie Matheson Hance, author. Hard having two last names, but there it is. And on Instagram, I'm mmhance, author. And if you're looking about where to find my books, they're on sale at Barnes & Noble. And they're also available, not Barnes & Noble, I'm sorry, but they are available at Barnes & Noble, but mostly through Amazon. That's the best place to look for them.
And I'm just holding up. Yeah. And tell us the titles of the other two.
Sure.
And you can hold them up. Oh, yeah.
There's a cormorant.
Look at that cover. Oh, my goodness. Okay, oh, yeah. Yes.
This is my favorite cover, I think. The Man Three Cottages Down.
Yeah, Three Cottages Down. The very last line of this book is a teaser for that book.
Yes, it is. And if you go to my website. Oh, I'm sorry. What did you say?
Yeah, go ahead. She's made a reference to it already. So go ahead. And Jim has a very short quote.
Was she going to give her website?
She just
address?
Did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What I was going to just say, though, is that if people want signed copies, go to my website, because then I sign them.
There you go.
Yeah. And Jim has a short quote, and then we'll be bringing on Daryl. So here's Jim with.
This just follows on what you just said. It's a quote from Murder at Pelican Lake. The air smelled like nowhere else. A distinct combination of fresh water, dead fish, cut grass, and wet wood. She took a deep breath. How could this place stay so much the same while the rest of her life was so chaotic?
Marjorie, thank you for being with us. We have Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison in common, and we couldn't do what we do without them. We're going to have a word from Blue Cottage Agency, and when we come back, Daryl J. Peterson will be joining us. Don't go away.
Thanks so much.
Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experience, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer with our special guest, Daryl J. Peterson.
And here he is. Hello, Daryl.
Hello. I'm glad to be here with you.
We're delighted to have
you. We got two books right here.
I'm holding up the book. Yes. Go ahead. You want to say the titles? We have Campfire in the Basement, which was the first book. And now it's Companion, Who Will Carry the Fire. And we're delighted to have you with us, Daryl.
Thank you.
Jim, you have a little bio.
We have a little bio.
To get us
Let's
started.
Let's read it, get you started, and then you can expand upon that. Daryl J. Peterson was raised in the 1950s, 60s on a little lake in Minnesota's North Woods. He grew up and moved away, but his heart never left. His family, the lake, the woods, and critters taught him how to appreciate today and to be hopeful for tomorrow, while leaving the world a little bit better than he found it. Welcome, Daryl.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here. I'm coming to you from the shore of White Sand Lake in Baxter, Minnesota, and the Brainerd Lakes country in the North Woods of Minnesota. It's going to be 21 below by Monday. We've got 6 inches of snow and about 20 inches of ice.
But you're not sitting in a fish house.
No fish house. No more fish houses for me.
We have learned, as has our audience that follow us, so we've had Gene Cooney on, also from Minnesota, and we learned all about fish houses from one of her murder mysteries. So. Well, we're just so happy. Both of these books are so incredibly engaging and fun to read and will entertain you, but also make you think. And I had found as I read them that I know I could read a story. I could put the book down and maybe turn out the light, knowing that there's a good story to read tomorrow. But also knowing that if I reread that story, I would come away with a whole other observation. You know, I find these stories, Daryl, just talk to the heart. And they're all relevant, even though we maybe didn't live your life. You know how to write to make the reader be able to relate to what you're writing.
Thank you for that high praise. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
What? Give us a little background info about your writing, when you kind of started and what really got you going.
Okay. Well, not unlike Marjorie, writing has been a part of my career, only in a different vocation. I'm a retired Lutheran pastor, and for 40 years, I wrote a sermon every week, plus lots of funerals and weddings. And I had the notion that if I didn't have a story in my sermon, it wasn't done. And so I always was reflecting back on my childhood and other people's lives around me and so on to come up with an illustration that would match the text for that week. 26 years ago, one of my parishioners asked me if I would submit my sermon illustration to her son's new magazine, Lake Country Journal magazine, here in the Brainerd Lakes area. I did. It was about a fish house disaster. My wife saved her money and purchased a fish house for me, and I didn't take care of it properly, and it ended up in the landfill by the end of the first winter. And so it was real tragedy, real no more ice fishing for me. But anyway, it was used in the magazine. People loved it in the community. They reused it in the 10th anniversary issue. And that got me started thinking, well, I can write stories more than for sermons. I can write them for the average public, the general public. And so that's what I started doing. I was published several times again in that magazine and elsewhere. I started taking writing classes. My father and mother died, and I determined I've got to write down some of their life story so that my kids and grandkids can remember and honor them. And I found when I started doing those stories that other people appreciate them as well. Yeah. And so that then evolved into the two books that you've just showed us.
Yeah, that's great. There's in the titles, you know, the first one's Campfire in the Basement, and the second is Who Will Carry the Fire? And I would like you to take a moment and just talk on why is a campfire such a perfect setting for storytelling? And the idea of that carrying that fire forward. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, here in northern Minnesota, and I suspect maybe all over the country, people love sitting around campfires, whether it's in their backyard or in a state park someplace, something like that. And when you sit there for just a little bit, the cares of the world kind of drift away, you relax, you start breathing easier, you're hearing nature sounds around you. Maybe you have a good friend with you or family member. Next thing you know, you're visiting, and the stories just flow. It's almost automatic. It's almost a natural sort of a thing. And because you're having that peaceful moment, you listen and maybe ask questions, learn from your partner, share some of your own insights as well. It's a wonderful place to share stories.
Daryl, why are family stories, I mean, these are entertaining stories, but at the same time, you encourage the reader to think about the stories they may have in their personal life or their family, knowing their family stories. Why is it important? You really encourage us to share those. Why is that important?
I'll give you a little snippet that actually concludes my first book. Sitting in this very office, my two grandsons, ages at that point 5 and 7, Bjorn and Anders, were visiting for a few days. I was working in my office. They came to the door behind me. I didn't see them. I heard the words, "Grandpa, can we look in your center desk drawer?" And I looked around. I said, "Anders, why do you want to look in my center desk drawer?" He said, "Grandpa, that's where you keep your peppermints." I said, "Anders, how did you know that?" "It's in your book, Grandpa." Little 7-year-old Anders had read my manuscript that I'd given to my kids, to his 5-year-old brother, and they know all those stories. So in they came. I said, "Let's take a look." I opened my desk drawer. Uh-oh, trouble. no peppermints.
Oh.
But there were M&Ms, and that was satisfactory.
Even better.
Yes. And so now, almost whenever we get together, one or the other boys will say, Grandpa, tell us a story. Tell us about when you fell in the lake with the brand new cowboy boots. Tell us when you started the campfire in the basement. Tell us about stuff our dad did when he was little. Mm-hmm. So the importance of stories, our parents and grandparents, ancestors, lots of other people, community members, teachers, etc., worked so hard, sacrificed so much to give us a good life, to give us the quality of life we know. And they went through tough times and scarcity and so on. They had lots of laughter and joy and storytelling, but they not only survived, they often thrived. And and we in this day are going through tough times also, and we need hopeful stories. We need to hear how our ancestors made it through and what they did to help us to have the quality of lives we have. Long answer, but that's basically
That's a great idea. That's great.
What when you're sitting down and you're crafting a story or you're reading a story, what are, if you were to give me some ideas, Bobby, when you sit down and you think about your family history, here's a couple of elements that I would suggest that you make sure get included. I'm sure you could do a whole day seminar on that. But if I'm thinking, gosh, I don't think I have any stories that would be of interest, what would be a couple things you might encourage me to think about as I began to craft a story?
You already cited an example. Earlier when we were visiting, you talked about your campfire experience at camp. And the if you drink this water, you're going to, this spring water, you're going to come back to this camp again and again. That's a universal story. Yeah. So when you're putting a story together, if you can include a universal, something that a lot of other people have experienced, you've just hit a gold mine. And so the campfire would be an example of universal. Your camping experience would be an example. And so universals would be one. A descriptive detail. Initially, I tried to make stories real short, but my first writing retreat I went to, people said, what kind of a pickup truck was it? What color was the truck? How old was the guy driving the truck? I realized readers like to know more so they can envision what's going on in the story. Humor. And I've learned that self-deprecating humor is really important. People don't want to hear about your victories. They want to hear about your struggles and sometimes when you don't win and be able to laugh with you. I have a saying that I picked up this summer from a neighboring booth, bad mistakes often make good stories. And so there's a whole lot of laughter in some of the mistakes that I've made. Heartfelt moments also. We all experience loss and heartache and so on. And it's good for us to be able to share those with each other. Mm-hmm. And then surprise. When people are reading my stories and they're expecting this is going to happen, oh, no, it went the opposite direction entirely. Those are the things I would say are really helpful.
We're talking to our second featured guest tonight, and you would just love these are stories. They're it's like memories. It's not really a memoir exactly because each story is its own story. The first one, again, Campfire in the Basement, and the second one, Who Will Carry the Fire. We're going to step away, Daryl, just for a moment to let our listeners know one of the places that they can find the books of many of our featured guests is our Out West Shop affiliate page at bookshop.org. And when we come back, we're going to get into some more storytelling with this wonderful storyteller, Daryl J. Peterson. So don't go away. We're going to be back in just a moment. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking with Daryl J. Peterson and his two books, Campfire in the Basement and Who Will Carry the Fire. You know, Daryl, would you like to highlight, talk about one of the stories?
Let's start with this one, Campfire in the Basement. Tell us a story from there.
I'm going to give you guys a choice. Since you've read my book, would you like me to tell about They Could Eat You Before Anyone Ever Knew, or Kiss on the Lips, or Squirrels 1, Home Team 0? Which one should
you play? Yeah, the squirrels.
Oh, Jim, you're going to vote for the squirrel story.
Every male listener out there will bond with the squirrel story.
I still hear that squirrel's nails running through our house.
So there's a universal. I'm on my way to take a shower. I have a towel around my waist. I look out the window of the house, and this is February in Minnesota, and it was a real winter. We had plenty of snow, and it was plenty cold. I look out the window, and I see a squirrel on my squirrel-proof bird feeder. For a couple of weeks, I hadn't been a squirrel. I thought, I beat him. I finally beat those squirrels. I got excited, and I went over and banged on the picture window. He didn't even look at me. And so I'm standing with this towel around my waist. I'm going to go out the patio door and yell at him off the patio. Oh, Jennifer moved a couch. It's in front of the door. I'm not going to go through there. I'll go through the laundry room. So I went through the house, got out to the laundry room, opened the door, stepped on the porch, yelled at the squirrel. He took off. I thought, I'm not going to see you for a while again. And then I turned to go back in the house, and the door was locked. It's February. Lots of snow on the ground. It was probably 20 degrees outside. I'm standing in the back porch with a towel around my waist. The door's locked and nobody's home. And I think I'll just leave the story right there for you. But that's an example of the kind of stories that I have in my book. Real life stories. That's not made up. That really happened. And it can happen to anybody. And I, like Jim said, I think lots of us battle squirrels all the time.
Yes, we do.
Okay, so now let's go to the second book, Who Will Carry the Fire? And is there a story you'd like to share from this book?
I think maybe I will share the story about 12 guys in my deer stand.
Yes.
I was actually thinking of naming the second book 12 Guys in My Deer Stand, and my wife told me, no self-respecting woman will even pick it up. You can't do that. And so consequently, a little bit more searching came up with Who Will Carry the Fire. The story about 12 Guys in My Deer Stand is every November in Minnesota is the firearms deer hunting season. Runs from a week to 3 weeks, or 2 weeks, depending on where you live. My son and I go out and hunt in a little public land, and the story I just described quite a bit of detail on getting to the stand in the darkness and quietly climbing up the tree and getting seated there and so on. And after I've looked around and trying to scope things up, the sun comes out and you can see a little better and so on. And then I mentioned how my father appeared to me in the stand, dead for years. And next, one of my uncles came, and then another fellow that I've known for years appeared in my deer stand while I'm sitting there taking in this amazing creation around me. And each of those people, and the reason I was prompted in thinking about them, had contributed something to my life, or had contributed something to the clothing I was wearing, or the gun I was holding, or the scope on my gun. And so consequently, that story leads me, as does most of the second book, to reflect on the amazing people that have contributed to my life, and how my life has been shaped by them, my love of the woods, my knowledge of hunting, my desire to be out in the creation every chance I get. That's that story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know you have a question.
Let's talk about this campfire in the basement.
Okay. Well, you want to hear about that?
Yeah, well, we have the pyromaniac, you know?
Yes. I was 8 years old, and it was Christmas Day, and in those
really
days,
good cover. Take a moment, Daryl, for those that can't necessarily see.
It's the title is Campfire in the Basement. The subtitle is Reflections from Northwoods Lake. And the little medallion you see on there, I was awarded the Northeastern Minnesota Book Award for Best Memoir of 2024 for that book. And it just came out last year, and the second book just came out this year. So the campfire. House full of company, adults upstairs, little kids downstairs playing games, Monopoly and Parcheesi and so on. Someone said, let's play camping. And I said, yeah, and I can build a campfire. We had a great big wood room full of firewood. We had a big wood-burning furnace. And if I stretched a little, I could reach the matches up on the pole. And my cousins, a dozen or so cousins, all said, yeah, let's play camping. Let's build a campfire. Everyone thought it was a good idea. So I got busy and got the paper, and I got the kindling and got the matches and got the paper burning, and everyone was so excited. They're all gathered around, and all of a sudden there's this horrific scream, and my mother comes rolling down the stairs as fast as I've ever seen her move, my father right on her heels. My cousins parted like the Red Sea. It was all my fault. And I'll just leave the story there.
Daryl, in the second book, the title, you know, Who Will Carry the Fire? It's a great cover, and it's a great question. And as a reader, I'm always thinking back to a title, no matter what I read, and I kind of like, I wonder. So with that in mind, when you were putting this book together, who do you hope will carry the fire?
Yes. I'm going to go back to the conclusion of my first book, which I told the story about my grandsons and where the peppermints, Grandpa. They want to hear our family stories. And because they've heard so many of our family stories and repeat them back to us and so on, I know that they have a notion of where they've come from and hopefully some notion of where they're headed, some good directions to be heading in the world. And I'm hoping in the second book that that will be emphasized even more. I'm hoping people will read my book, enjoy my stories, remember their own stories, celebrate the amazing lives they've been given, and then make sure that gets passed down to the next generations. And the Who Will Carry the Fire comes from, in northern Minnesota, the Ojibwe people lived here before the Europeans ever arrived. And they moved from season to season. They would move their camp to where the rice was being harvested or the maple syrup was being gathered or the fish were being caught. And when they moved their camp, early on at least, somebody had to carry the fire. Somehow that fire had to get from this campsite to the next one. That fire was life-giving. They counted on it. It gathered together as community. Well, the stories from our growing up years are our fire. Fires of hope and possibility for the next generations to be able to turn to and count on and live a good life just like we've been given.
Good.
What kind of responses have you gotten from readers, Daryl?
Yes. I sold my book to two older fellows, one I knew, one I didn't, on different occasions. Later in the summer, I saw each of them again separately. They both told me this story. I sat down in the chair one evening to start reading your book. I finished it by morning. These are ordinary guys. They're not college professors or anything, just ordinary guys who were so engaged in reading my stories and remembering their own stories. I just got a nice card here just a couple of days ago from a fellow in central Minnesota. It's a chickadee, and you can see it's breakfast here in the wintertime. In this card, he goes on to say he purchased both of my books last summer up at Ely at the Blueberry Festival, read them both, loved them, so appreciated the stories that reminded him of his own childhood, wished he'd had some of that wisdom when he was 22 instead of 62. And that's the kind of thing that makes me delight when someone reads my book, finds themselves in there, and then maybe feels motivated to tell some of their stories that might be a benefit to someone else.
I'm sure you have a question.
Well, I thought, you know, the one on Candy Heaven.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought there was a neat story about, obviously working for Candy, but you kind of take us down memory lane, you know, and how life has changed and how things have changed. And then maybe how life is still the same, but other things have changed.
I just lost the last.
Sorry. My microphone is cutting out now and again. So, Jim, he didn't hear your last part.
The last sentence I didn't hear.
Sorry.
Well, we're talking about Candy Heaven, and it's also kind of talks about the old country store and the past, and now some things are gone. I think some of the things about life are all still the same, but some of the old familiar haunts are gone. Would you care to comment about that one?
Yeah, that's another universal, the country store, the old country store, at least for rural people. Just they had about everything you needed in that one pretty good sized building. And one of the things they had was a candy counter. And when we would come to Culver's store, Harry or Bill, whichever one was working that day, the two owners would say, oh, Daryl, come on around behind the counter so you can see that candy better. And I'd go around the counter and I'd maybe have a dime to spend. And you can buy quite a bit of penny candy for 10 cents.
You could. Yeah, root beer barrels. And
people would stand in that store and they would talk about what's going on in the community and the world. Yeah. And so like the Vietnam War was talked about and what's happening on the Iron Range. And what about this taconite business? And people just had a good place to gather and spend a half hour or so just catching up with each other in the world. And unfortunately, now the country stores are pretty much all closed, and you have to go to the big box stores, and you don't know anybody there, and they don't know you, and you probably don't talk to anybody. And so a part of my life, yeah, and part of this book, I make it a point to talk to the clerks. I make it a point to thank them for being there and wish them a good day and so on. And so some of the things that we've lost, we can try to capture back again, yeah, just by ourselves in our own life and our own interactions, mm-hmm, with people.
Yeah. We're going to take just a very short break and hear from another of our sponsors, which is the company Jim and I have, outwestshop.com. And when we come back, Daryl's going to tell us where we can get his books. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out outwestshop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking to Daryl J. Peterson and his two books, Campfire in the Basement and Carrying the Torch.
So, Daryl, where can people follow you, find you, and get your book? Uh-oh.
We lost Daryl.
Uh-oh. Daryl, if you can hear us, come on back in. While we're waiting for Daryl to come in, you want to go ahead and give a quote, honey?
Well, we can.
Yeah. You have a quote from his book?
Yeah, from the book, Who Will Carry the Fire? Special people and special places do well together. A little lake, a dock, a muskeg swamp with the moon suspended overhead. These are some of my special places.
And we're holding up his books again, Who Will Carry the Fire and Campfire in the Basement. And that was our guest who he just, for whatever reason, he may have had an internet problem. We never quite know. But that was Daryl, DarrellJ. Peterson, PEDERSEN, and he's back.
All right.
Welcome back, Daryl. Do you want to just give us your web address and such?
You know, I think I found it. I leaned on my computer, and I'm not very computer literate, and I knocked out a button. So
we are happy to have you back. No worries.
Yeah. I'm pleased to be back. The website is the place I'd encourage you to look for ordering books. We pay the shipping, so you can buy the books for just the cost of the book. The website is my name, DarrellJPeterson.com. It's spelled DarrellJPed as in dog, ERSEN.com. And my Facebook is Daryl J with a period, Peterson Writer.
Yeah.
And you can find them in in Minnesota bookstores and on Amazon and so on.
And did you read both quotes?
No, I didn't.
Okay, good. We were reading quotes while we had quickly lost you, Daryl, but here's Jim back with.
We're going to read this one again. From Who Will Carry the Fire? Special people and special places do well together. A little lake, a dock, a muskeg swamp with a moon suspended overhead. These are some of my special places. And this one we had to put in. This is from Martin Luther the Reformer. If you want to change the world, pick up your pen and write.
What great advice Martin Luther had.
Think you're doing.
Yeah, we should open or close every show with that quote.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of your program. Thanks to Blue Cottage Agency for getting this going, too. And thanks to all the people who are listening and participating in this wonderful program.
We were delighted to have you.
We were delighted to have you.
And, of course, our first guest tonight. And we'll just hold up Marjorie's book again, Murder at Pelican Lake. It's the first of a series of three books. And that was Marjorie Matheson Hantz. And
what's next?
Next week. And Daryl, just stay right where you are. You're with us till the end. Next week, we are delighted. This is a very different kind of show, and we're very excited about it. There's a new critically acclaimed Western story anthology called Through Western Storms. And Richard Prosh is the editor, and he's going to be with us. And he's bringing with him three of the contributing authors to this book. Mm. And we're so excited. We're going to have John D. Nesbitt, Nancy McCabe, and our good friend Jim Jones. Yeah. And then in February, Richard's coming back 1 week with three other authors. And if you like short stories, you will want Daryl's books and you will want this one, Through Western Storms. And do you have anything else?
I think we're reaching the end.
I think we say, Daryl, thank you for being with us. And happy trails.
And that too. And it's always a great day out west.
Out west. Keep writing and we'll keep reading. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Daryl. Thank you.